who turned into a dove when she died. Colum means dove, too. Doves stand for peace, which is what your mother wanted more than anything else. I guess she must have, Call said, feeling even more uncomfortable that her scrutiny had turned to him, and also a little sad that this woman had known more about his mother than he did. Mrs. Rajavi smiled down at him, brushing a lock of his ink-black hair out of his eyes. She must have loved you very much, and you must miss her. Call bit the inside of his cheek, remembering the words his mother had carved in the ice of the cave where she died. She must have spent a long time picking out the name Colum. She'd probably made a list, argued back and forth over a half dozen favorites with Alistair before settling on Colum. Colum, which stood for doves and peace, and the end of the war. And then Constantine Madden had killed her child and stolen that small body for himself. Call was the opposite of everything she'd ever hoped for. Call realized he was biting down so hard that the inside of his mouth was bleeding. Thank you, Mrs. Rajavi, he forced himself to say. Then, barely even seeing where he was going, he boarded the bus. Havoc followed, flopping down in the aisle so everyone else had to step over him. There were a few kids already seated. Aaron was up near the front. He shoved over, leaving room for Call to flop down next to him and watch as Mr. and Mrs. Rajavi kissed Tamara goodbye. Call thought about Tamara's stories about her parents and about the third sister who'd become one of the devoured. He remembered how stern and cold they'd seemed at the trial. Were they pretending to be the perfect family for Aaron's benefit, trying to act like the fantasy parents he'd never had? Whatever impression they were trying to make, Cole wasn't sure they succeeded. Kimaya sat in the back and cried all the way to the magisterium. Cole remembered the first time he'd ever arrived at the magisterium, and how alien and strange the caves had seemed, glowing with bioluminescent moss, underground rivers lapping at silty shores, and shimmering stalactites hanging from the ceilings like fangs. Now, it seemed like home. A laughing, chattering group of students poured in through the gates. People ran around hugging one another. Jasper came across the room to hug Tamara, even though, Call thought with annoyance, it had been barely 2 weeks since he'd seen her. Everyone crowded around Aaron, even the fourth and fifth years with their silver and gold wristbands, clapping him on the back and ruffling his hair. Call felt a hand on his shoulder. It was Alex, who'd made it to the magisterium before their slow bus. "Just remember," he said, looking over at Aaron. "No matter how much of a fuss everyone makes over him, you're still his best friend." "Right," Call said. He wondered if Alex was upset over the breakup, but he didn't look it. Someone was running toward Call through the crowd.
"Call! Call!"
It was Celia, her mass of dirty blonde hair tamed into a ponytail. She looked delighted to see him, beaming all over her face. Alex moved away with an amused smile.
"Did you have a good summer?" Celia asked. "I heard you were at Tamara's. Was it awesome? Were you there for the party? I heard the party was great. Did you see the mage tricks? Were there really frozen manticores?"
They were ice manticores, not like actual manticores that had been frozen. Call felt dizzy trying to keep up. "I mean, I think. Are manticores real?"
"That sounds so cool. Jasper told me all about it."
"Jasper's a—" Call looked at Celia's beaming face and decided not to pursue the topic of Jasper. Celia liked everyone. She couldn't seem to help it.
"Yeah.
So how come you weren't there?"
"Oh."
Celia blushed and ducked her head.
"It's nothing. My parents don't really get along with Tamara's, but I like Tamara."
She added hurriedly. "It would be okay if you didn't," he said.
She looked confused, and Call wanted to kick himself. What did he know about what was okay and what wasn't? He was the person who kept a mental list of potentially evil behaviors. Was it okay if she didn't like Tamara? Wasn't Tamara his best friend along with Aaron? Havoc suddenly barked and put his paws up on Celia's shirt, cutting off the discussion. Celia giggled.
Colum Hunt.
It was Master Rufus, striding toward them through the crowd.
Keep your chaos wolf silent, please.
He gave Havoc a beady eye, and Havoc slid to the ground, looking chastened.
Tamara, Aaron, Call, come with me to your rooms.
Aaron grinned at Call as they slung their duffels over their shoulders and followed behind Master Rufus through the tunnels. They knew their way, and Call found that he was no longer unnerved by the dripping stalactites and the quiet cool of the caves. Tamara paused to look into a pool where pale fish darted back and forth. Call thought he saw a crystalline shape scamper over the wall behind her. Was it Warren? Or some other elemental? He frowned, remembering the little lizard. Finally, they were in front of their old rooms. Master Rufus stepped back to allow Tamara to wave her new copper wristband in front of the door. It unlocked instantly, allowing them into the chambers. The rooms were just as they'd been when they arrived for their iron year, the same chandelier carved with designs of flame, the same half-circle of desks, the same duo of plush sofas facing each other, and the same massive fireplace. Symbols picked out in mica and quartz shimmered when the light hit them, and three doors adorned with each of their names led to their bedrooms. Call let out a long sigh and dropped onto one of the couches.
There will be dinner in the refectory in a half hour. Then you'll put away your things and go to bed early. The first years arrived yesterday. Tomorrow, lessons begin in earnest,
said Master Rufus, with a long look at each one of them.
Some say that the copper year of apprenticeship is the most grueling. Do you know why?
The three of them glanced at one another. Call had no idea what Master Rufus was looking for. Master Rufus nodded at their silence, clearly pleased.
Because now that you know the basics, we'll be going out on missions. Classes here will be confined to keeping up with your maths and sciences, as well as a few new tricks. But the real learning will be out in the field. We'll begin this week with some experiments.
Call had no idea what to make of their new curriculum, but the fact that Master Rufus was delighted about it could only be a bad sign. Going out of the stuffy, damp magisterium classroom sounded like fun, but Call had been wrong before. During one of their outside exercises, he'd nearly drowned under a pile of logs, and Jasper, of all people, had pulled him out.
Get settled in, said Master Rufus, with his usual regal nod, and swept out of their chambers.
Tamara dragged her suitcase toward her room.
Call, you'd better put on your uniform before dinner. They should have left one for you in your room like last year. You can't show up to the refectory in jeans and a t-shirt that says, Dr. Monkey knows what you did.
What does that mean anyway? Aaron asked.
Call shrugged.
I don't know. I got it at the Salvation Army store.
He stretched.
Maybe I'll take a nap. I'm not tired. I'm going to the library,
Aaron said, abandoning his bag and starting for the door.
You want to find out about the Alkahest?
Call guessed. It was clearly some kind of weapon, but none of them had been able to piece together exactly what it was or what it did. No one seemed to want to answer any questions about it in anything but the vaguest possible terms, and the library at the Rajavi's house hadn't held any answers either. Call hated to admit it, but he'd been relieved. The more they talked about the Alkahest and the enemy and his possible plans,
the more Call felt like he was going to get caught.
I need to be able to protect people, Aaron said, and I can't do that if I don't even understand the threat.
Call sighed.
Can't we look up stuff after we unpack?
You don't have to come, Aaron said. I'm not going to be in any danger on my way to the library.
Don't be stupid, Tamara said. Of course we're coming. Call has just got to put on his uniform.
Yeah, he said, with obviously forced enthusiasm, heading for his room and throwing his duffel on the bed. He had a little trouble getting his feet into the big boots they all wore around the magisterium to protect them from rocks and water, and, on occasion, lava, but he figured he'd get used to them again. When he headed back to the common room, Aaron and Tamara were perched on the back of the sofa, sharing a bag of ruffles. Tamara held it out to him. Call grabbed the bag, shoving a fistful of chips into his face, and started toward the door. They followed, and Havoc ran after them, barking. By the time they spilled out into the hallway, Havoc was in the lead.
Library, Call told him. Library, Havoc!
On the way, Call vowed to be helpful. After all, what made evil overlords bad was how they acted, not their secret thoughts. There was no such thing as a helpful evil overlord. It was a huge relief to be able to walk around the corridors of the magisterium openly with Havoc, instead of hiding him in the bedroom. The other students cast them glances that were a mixture of respect, fear, and admiration when they saw the chaos-ridden wolf loping ahead of them. Of course, they were impressed by Aaron, too, the black gem stark in his wristband. But Havoc belonged to Call. Not that that was what anyone thought. Aaron's wolf, he heard the students whisper to one another as they passed.
Look at the size of that thing. He must be pretty powerful to control it.
You forgot your wristband, Aaron said with a sideways grin, dropping Cole's new copper wristband into his hand.
Again. Don't make me always have to remind you.
Call rolled his eyes, sliding the wristband on. It felt good on his wrist. Familiar. They reached the library, which was shaped like the inside of a conch shell, a spiral room that narrowed as it went down until it reached a flat lower level where long tables had been set up. Since classes hadn't started yet, the place was empty.
Where do we start? Call wondered aloud, looking around the vast expanse of books that stretched down and away.
Well, I'm no library expert, but A for Alkahest seems like a safe bet, said Tamara, skipping ahead. She was obviously thrilled to be back.
As it turned out, the library was divided into sections and subsections. They eventually turned up a book entitled Alkahests and Other Indices of Magic on a top shelf that required Aaron to stand on a chair to reach it. They brought the book over to one of the long tables, and Aaron carefully cracked it open. The spine shed dust.
Call tried to read over Aaron's shoulder, catching every few words.
An alkahest, the book said, was a universal solvent, a substance that dissolved all things, from gold to diamonds to chaos magic. As Call frowned, not sure what that had to do with what they'd overheard, Aaron flipped the page and they saw a drawing of the alkahest, which wasn't a substance at all, but an enormous glove, a gauntlet, really, made from copper. Forged from a combination of all the elemental forces, the gauntlet was a weapon created for one purpose, to push the ability to control chaos out of a Makar. Instead of controlling the void, the Makar would be destroyed by it. The gauntlet could be wielded by any mage, but it required the living heart of a chaos creature to give it power. Call sucked in a long breath. He'd seen the exact same gauntlet in the drawing in his father's creepy basement ritual room. The alkahest had been the reason Alistair had wanted to cut out Havoc's heart.
Alistair must have tried to steal the gauntlet from the Collegium. Call's head swam. He gripped the edge of the table to keep himself upright. Aaron flipped the page. There was a black and white photograph of the gauntlet in a glass case, probably in its resting place in the Collegium. A brief history was recorded in a sidebar beside the picture. It had been created by a group of researchers who'd called themselves the Order of Disorder. Master Joseph and Constantine Madden had once been part of their number, hoping to plumb the depths of chaos magic and to find a way to allow more mages to access the void. When Constantine Madden broke away and became the enemy of death, the Order had hoped their alchemist could stop him. Apparently, the alchemist had fallen into the enemy's hands near the end of the war, allowing the enemy's minions to kill Verity Torres on the battlefield, while Constantine Madden led more of his forces to the mountain in La Rinconada for the Cold Massacre. The book said that the Order of Disorder still existed, researching chaos-ridden animals, though no one was sure who their leaders were now.
"The mages will figure out who tried to take it," Tamara said. "And it's in a safer place now. If one of Constantine Madden's people get a hold of it, the next time I see the gauntlet, it'll be pointed at me."
Aaron exhaled a long, worried breath.
"Let's see if this book says anything about destroying the alchemist."
Cole wanted to say something, to reassure Aaron that it wasn't the minions of the enemy who were after the gauntlet. It was just Cole's dad. But before he could decide to do it, Master Rufus made his way down the Nautilus stairs of the library. All three of his apprentices turned to look guiltily in his direction, even though there was nothing for them to look guilty about. They were in a library, researching. Rufus ought to have been thrilled. He didn't look thrilled. He looked worried. Peering over Tamara's shoulder, he frowned and said,
"Aaron, the alchemist is locked up. The assembly had it moved to a vault designed by metal mages during the last war. It's underground, beneath a place you've been before, and completely secure."
"I just wanted to know more about it," Aaron said.
"I see."
Master Rufus folded his arms over his chest.
"Well, I am not here to interrupt your studies. I am here to speak with Colum."
"Me?" Cole asked.
"You."
Master Rufus took a few steps away from the others and Cole followed him reluctantly.
"Havoc, stay," Cole muttered.
He wasn't sure what the mage was going to tell him, but he could tell it wasn't going to be good.
"Your father is here to see you,"
the master announced.
"What?"
Cole shouldn't have been stunned, but he was.
"I thought parents weren't allowed to come to the Magisterium."
"They're not."
Master Rufus peered down at Cole, as though he was trying to discern the answer to some question.
"But the Magisterium is not in the habit of kidnapping students, either. I assumed you arrived here in the standard manner. Alistair informed us that he didn't speak with you before you left your home. He said you ran away."
"He doesn't want me to be here," said Cole. "He wants me to stay away from the Magisterium."
"As you know,"
said Rufus gently.
"Such a thing is not possible for a mage who has passed the first gate. You must complete your training."
"I want to," said Cole. "I don't want to go back with him. I don't have to, do I?"
"No,"
said Master Rufus, but the way he said the word, the answer didn't seem quite as definite.
"But, as I said, it's not our intention to steal children away from their parents. I thought he'd gotten more used to the idea of you being my apprentice."
"Not really," Cole said.
"I'll go with you, if you like," said Master Rufus, "when you talk to him."
"I don't want to talk to him," Cole blurted out.
Part of him wanted desperately to see his father, wanted to make sure he was okay after the horror of seeing him slam against a wall. but he knew he couldn't. It would be impossible for them to have a conversation that didn't involve the words Constantine or Murder Me or Alcahest. There were just too many secrets that people might overhear. I want you to tell him to leave. Call told his teacher. Master Rufus looked for a long time at Call. Then he sighed.
All right, he said. I'll do as you ask.
You don't look like you want to, Call said.
Alistair was my student once, said Rufus. I hold him in regard still. I had hoped that your attendance here would begin to soften his hatred for mages and the magisterium.
Call couldn't think of anything to say to that. Not without telling Master Rufus things he couldn't possibly tell him. He just shook his head.
Please, make him go away, he whispered.
Master Rufus nodded and turned to leave the library. Call glanced back over at Aaron and Tamara. They were both leaning on the table, their faces tinted green by the lamps. They were staring at him worriedly. He thought about going back over to them, but he didn't feel like facing their questions. Instead, he turned and raced out of the library as fast as his leg would let him. Chapter 6 Call wandered through the halls of the Magisterium, heading down toward the cool lakes and rivers that ran through the caves. Eventually, he stopped by the side of one, took off his boots, and stuck his feet into the silty water. He wondered again about whether he was a good person. He'd always figured he was okay, like most people. Not terrible, but not great either. Normal. Definitely not a murderer. But Constantine Madden was a murderer. He was an evil madman who'd created monsters and tried to cheat death, and Call was Constantine. So didn't that mean he was responsible for everything Constantine had ever done, even if he didn't remember it? And now Call was letting Aaron worry and plan to face a threat that didn't even exist because he was selfish. Call kicked the water, sending droplets flying against the wall and scattering the pale, eyeless fish that had gathered around his toes. Just then, a lizard dropped down from the ceiling onto the stone beside Call.
Oh!
Call yelled, jumping to his feet. What are you doing here?
Live here, said Warren,
tongue flicking out to lick an eyeball.
Watch you.
Because that wasn't creepy at all. Call sighed. The last time he'd seen the lizard, Warren had led Call, Tamara, and Aaron into the room of one of the Devoured, a mage who'd used so much fire magic that he'd become a fire elemental. The warning of the Devoured rang in Call's ears. One of you will fail. One of you will die. And one of you is already dead. Now Call knew which one of those he was. Callum Hunt was already dead.
Go away, he warned the lizard. Go away or I'll drown you in the river.
Warren gave him a goggle-eyed look before scuttling halfway up the wall.
Not the only thing that's watching, he said,
before disappearing into the darkness. With a sigh, Call picked up his boots and padded barefoot back to his chambers. There, he flung himself down on one of the couches and stared into the fireplace, concentrating on not thinking about anything awful, until Tamara and Aaron returned, Havoc trotting after them. Aaron was carrying a big plate of lichen. Despite himself, Call's stomach growled at the fried chicken smell coming off the mass of green stuff.
You didn't go to dinner, Tamara said. Rafe and Kai say hello.
Is everything okay? Aaron asked.
Yep, Call said, taking a big forkful of lichen and adding another lie to his growing evil overlord list. Classes started the next morning. For the first time, they had a dedicated classroom.
Or class cave, he guessed. It was a big room with uneven, rocky walls and a circular depression in the center. The circle was a sunken bench around which they could sit for lessons. There was also a pool for practicing water magic and providing a counterweight for fire. Additionally, there was a pit of churned-up dirt and, probably just for Aaron, there was a metal plinth on which rested a gleaming black stone, symbol of the void. Aaron, Tamara, and Call flopped onto the bench while Master Rufus smoothed out a space of wall. As he gestured, sparks flew from his fingers, tracing letters over the stone.
Last year, you walked through the gate of control. You mastered your magic. That is the first step toward being a true mage. This year, we will begin to work on your mastery of the elements themselves.
He began to pace. Rufus often paced when he was thinking.
Some masters, if they had a chaos mage in their group, would separate out that student from the others. They would teach him or her on their own, believing that a chaos mage might otherwise disrupt the balance of their apprentice group.
What? Aaron looked horrified.
I won't do that,
Rufus said, frowning at them. Call wondered what it was like for him, being the master who'd turned out to have a Makar in his group. Most masters would kill for the chance, but most masters weren't Rufus. He'd taught Constantine Madden, and that had gone horribly wrong. Maybe he didn't want to take any more chances.
Aaron will stay with the group. I understand that Call will be your counterweight.
Aaron looked over at Call as though he was expecting Call to take back the offer.
Yeah, Call said. I mean, if he still wants.
That made Aaron give him a lopsided grin. I want.
Good.
Master Rufus nodded.
So we'll work on counterweight exercises, all of us. Earth, air, water, and fire. Aaron, I want you to be proficient in those before you attempt to use Call as your counterweight.
Because I could hurt him, Aaron said.
You could kill him,
Master Rufus cautioned.
You won't, though,
Tamara told Aaron. Call frowned, wondering how close the two of them had gotten over the summer, and if that was another reason Aaron hadn't mentioned staying at Tamara's house. Tamara looked over at Call, her expression oddly intense.
I won't let anything bad happen to you.
I am sure no one thinks you would hurt a friend on purpose,
Master Rufus said, glancing toward Call.
And we're going to make sure that none of you hurts anyone by accident, either.
Call let out a breath. That was exactly what he wanted to learn, how not to hurt anyone, even by accident. Aaron looked horrified.
Can I just not have a counterweight, if the counterweight might die?
Master Rufus looked at him with something that might have been pity.
Chaos magic takes a terrible toll on a Makar, and it's not always easy to see when you're using too much of it. You need a counterweight for your own safety. But it would be better if you never used one.
Call tried to smile at Aaron encouragingly, but Aaron wasn't looking at him. Master Rufus went on to outline the rest of the year's studies. They were going to go on missions in the forest surrounding the Magisterium and do small tasks, move the paths of streams, put out fires, make observations of their surroundings, and bring back items for further study. A few of their missions would include other apprentice groups, and, eventually, all of the Copper Year students would be sent together to capture rogue elementals. Call thought about camping under the stars with Tamara and Aaron and Havoc. It sounded great. They could make s'mores, or at least toast some lichen, and tell ghost stories. Until their Copper Year ran out and summer started again, they could pretend the rest of the world and all its expectations didn't exist. That night,
Call was on his way to the mission gate with Havoc when Celia caught up to him. She had changed out of the uniform they had to wear during school hours and was wearing a fuzzy pink skirt and a pink and green striped blouse.
"Are you headed to the gallery?"
she asked, a little out of breath.
"We could go together."
He usually loved the warm pools and fizzy drinks and movies of the gallery, but he wasn't sure he wanted to be around so many people right then.
"I was just taking Havoc for a walk."
"I'll come along."
She smiled at him as if she really thought that standing outside in the muggy, mosquito-infested dark with him was just as much fun as the gallery. She bent to pet Havoc's head.
Okay.
Call said, unable to hide his surprise.
Great.
They went outside and watched as Havoc nosed around patches of weeds. Fireflies lit the air like sparks from a fire.
"Gwenda snuck a pet in this year,"
Celia said abruptly.
"Fuzzball. She says that since you guys get to keep a wolf, her ferret should be no big deal. The ferret's not even chaos-ridden. Jasper's allergic, though, so I don't know if she'll be able to keep her, no matter what she says."
Call grinned. Anything that was bad for Jasper had to be good for the world.
"I think I like Fuzzball."
It turned out that Celia was a font of information. She told Call which apprentice had a weird rash, who got cave lice, which iron year supposedly wet the bed. Celia knew about Alex and Kimaya breaking up and about Alex sulking. She also claimed that Rafe was a cheater.
"On tests?" Call asked, confused.
"No,"
Celia said, laughing.
"He kissed one girl on the mouth after he told another girl that he liked her. It's Susan DeVille who cheats on tests. She writes the answers on her wrist in invisible ink and then uses magic to turn it purple."
"You know everything,"
Call said, amazed. He had no idea that apprentices were telling one another that they liked one another.
"What about Jasper? Tell me something bad about Jasper."
She gave him a reproachful look.
"Jasper's nice. I don't know anything bad about him."
Call sighed in disappointment, just as Havoc trotted back toward them with an enormous leaf-covered branch in his mouth. He dropped it at Call's feet, tail wagging, as though he'd brought over a regular-sized stick he hoped Call would throw. After a moment of awed silence, both Call and Celia began to laugh. After that, Celia joined him for Havoc's evening walk most nights. Sometimes Tamara and Aaron came too, but since Tamara took Havoc for morning walks, and Aaron got extra Makar work piled on top of his regular studies, mostly they begged off. One day, toward the end of September, someone else joined Call on the path outside school. He thought for a second when he saw a boy loping toward him in jeans and a sweater. The hot weather had cooled off and there was a definite chill in the air, that it was Aaron. But as he got closer, Call realized it was Alex Strike. He looked disheveled and a little pale, though it could just have been his summer tan fading. Call stood on the path waiting as Alex approached, holding Havoc's leash. Call was definitely puzzled. Since school started, Alex hadn't so much as smiled across the refectory at him. And if Alex had been doing errands for Master Rufus, Call hadn't seen him. He'd assumed Alex was avoiding them all because of Kimaya, and also because, well, Alex was one of the most popular kids in school, and probably didn't have a lot of time for copper years. But now Alex was definitely seeking him out. He raised a hand in greeting as he got close to Call and Havoc.
"Hey, Call."
He bent down to pet the wolf.
"Havoc. Long time no see."
Havoc whined, looking mortally offended.
"I figured you were avoiding us," Call said.
"Because of Kimaya."
Alex straightened up.
"Do you ever not say what you're thinking?"
"That seems like a trick question somehow,"
Call mused. Havoc yanked at his leash and Call started along the path, following the wolf. Alex trotted after him.
It was actually Kimaya I wanted to talk to you about, Alex said. You know we broke up.
Everyone knows, said Call, zipping up his hoodie. It had rained recently and the trees were dripping.
Did Tamara say anything about Kimaya to you? Whether she's still angry at me?
Havoc jerked on his leash. Call let him go and Havoc bounded after something, probably a squirrel.
I don't think Tamara's ever mentioned Kimaya and you to me, he said, puzzled.
His first instinct was to tell Alex that there was no point asking him anything because he knew nothing about girls and less about dating, and Tamara never mentioned her sister's romantic choices. Also, Kimaya was so pretty that she probably had another boyfriend by now.
But his second instinct told him that his first instinct was evil overlordish. Evil overlords didn't help others with their love lives. He, Call, could.
Tamara has kind of a temper, Call said. I mean, she gets mad easily, but she doesn't stay mad. So if Kimaya is like her, she probably isn't still angry. You could try talking to her.
Alex nodded, but didn't look as if Call was saying anything he hadn't thought of.
Or you could try not talking to her, Call said. When I don't talk to Tamara, she comes and hits me. So that would be a way that Kimaya might come to you first. Plus, once she hits you, it breaks the ice.
Or my shoulder, said Alex.
I mean, if it doesn't work, then, like they say, if you love someone, set them free. Don't lock them up underground in a cavern.
I don't think that's the saying, Call.
Call looked at Havoc, bounding along the ridge.
Just don't show her who you really are, he said.
Pretend you're a person she might love and then she'll love you, because people just love who they think other people are anyway.
Alex whistled. When did you get so cynical? Do you get it from your dad?
Call frowned, no longer feeling inclined to be very helpful.
This has nothing to do with my dad. Why bring him up?
Alex stepped back, raising his hands.
Hey, all I know is what people say. That he was friends with the enemy of death once. He was in his mage group, and now he hates magicians and everything having to do with magic.
So what if he does? Call snapped.
Has he ever reached out to anyone? Alex asked. Any mages? Anyone he used to be friends with?
Call shook his head.
I don't think so.
He has a different life now.
It sucks when people are lonely, Alex said. My stepmother was lonely when my dad died, until she got on the assembly. Now she's happy running everyone's life.
Call wanted to deny that Alistair wasn't happy with his new non-magical, antique geek friends. But he remembered the tightness in his father's jaw, how quiet he'd been over the years, the haunted way he looked, sometimes, as though his burdens were almost too much to bear.
Yeah, Call said finally, snapping his fingers.
Havoc rushed down the hill toward him, claws scraping on the wet ground. He tried to not think of his dad.
Alone. At home.
Of what his dad had thought when Master Rufus came to tell him that Call didn't want to even see him.
It does.
He thought about it the next day as he listened to Master Rufus's lecture on advanced elemental usage.
Master Rufus paced back and forth in the front of the classroom, explaining how rogue elementals were dangerous and usually had to be put down. But occasionally, mages also found them useful to bind into service.
Flying depletes our magical energies, Master Rufus said. For example,
Aaron stuck up his hand, a public school reflex.
But doesn't controlling elementals also use up magical energy?
Master Rufus nodded.
Interesting question. Yes, it does deplete energy, but not continuously. Once you've bound an elemental, keeping them requires less energy. Almost all mages keep one or two elementals in their service, and schools like the Magisterium have many.
What?
Call looked around, half expecting some watery wyvern to burst through the rock wall.
Master Rufus raised a brow.
How do you think your uniforms get cleaned? Or your rooms, for that matter?
Call hadn't much thought about it before, but found himself unnerved. Was some creature like Warren scrubbing his underwear? He was mightily creeped out. But maybe that was speciesist. Maybe he needed to be more open-minded. He remembered Warren munching down eyeless fish. Maybe not. Master Rufus went on, warming to his subject.
And of course, the elementals we use in exercises, but also some for defense. Ancient elementals, sleeping deep in the caves, waiting.
Waiting for what? Call asked, wide-eyed.
For the summons to battle.
You mean if the war starts up again? Said Aaron tonelessly. They'll be sent out to fight the enemy.
Master Rufus nodded.
But how do you get them to do what you want? Call demanded. Why would they agree to sleep for such a long time and then be woken up just to fight?
They are bound to the Magisterium by ancient elemental magic, said Rufus. The first mages who ever founded the Academy captured them, bound their powers, and laid them to rest many miles below the earth. They rise at our bidding, and are controlled by us.
How is that different from the enemy and his chaos-ridden? Tamara asked. She'd somehow turned one of her braids into a lopsided bun with a pen, which now stuck out of her hair.
Tamara, Aaron said, it's completely different. The chaos-ridden are evil. Except havoc, he added hastily.
So what are these things, good? Tamara asked. If they're good, why keep them locked up underground?
They are neither evil nor good,
Rufus explained.
They are immensely powerful, like the Greek Titans, and they care nothing about human beings. Where they go, destruction and death follow, not because they wish to kill, but because they don't recognize or care what they do. Blaming a great elemental for destroying a town would be like blaming a volcano for erupting.
So they have to be controlled for everyone's good, Call said. He could hear the doubt and suspicion in his own voice.
One of the metal elementals, Automatonis, escaped after Verity Torres's battle with the enemy, said Rufus. He tore a bridge apart. The cars on it plunged into the water. People drowned before he was returned to his place below the Magisterium.
He wasn't punished?
Tamara sounded particularly interested in this.
Rufus shrugged.
As I said, it would be like punishing a volcano for erupting. We need these creatures. They are all we have to match the force of Constantine's chaos-ridden.
Can we see one? Call asked.
What?
Rufus paused, pen in hand.
I want to see one.
Even Call wasn't entirely sure why he was asking. There was something that compelled him about the idea of a creature that was neither evil nor good, that never had to worry about how to behave. A force of nature.
In a few weeks you will be starting missions, said Rufus. You will be on your own outside the Magisterium, traveling, carrying out projects. If you complete those successfully, I see no reason why you couldn't view a sleeping elemental.
There was a knock on the door, and after Rufus said it was okay to enter, it was pushed open. Rafe came inside. He'd looked a lot happier since Master Lemuel had left the Magisterium, but Call wondered if he'd been scared to come back to school after Drew's death.
Master Rockmaple sent you this, he said, holding out a folded-over paper to Master Rufus.
Master Rufus read it, then crumpled it in one hand. It burst into flame, blackening to ash.
Thank you,
he said to Rafe with a nod, as though setting correspondence on fire was a perfectly reasonable thing to do.
Tell your master I will see him at lunch.
Rafe left, wide-eyed. Call desperately wished he could see whatever was on that paper. The problem with having a horrible secret
was at any time anything happened, Call worried it had something to do with him. But Master Rufus didn't even look in his direction when he resumed the lesson, and when nothing happened the next day, or the day after, Call forgot to be worried. And as the weeks went by, and the leaves on the trees began to blaze with yellow and red and orange, like conjured fire, it became easier and easier for Call to forget he had a secret at all. Chapter 7. As the weather turned nippy, Call started wearing hoodies and sweaters on his walks with Havoc. Havoc had never really experienced fall and was having a deliriously good time hiding in piles of leaves with only his spotted paws sticking up.
"Does he think we can't see him?"
Celia asked curiously one day after Havoc had leaped down the side of a hill and crashed into a huge leaf pile. Just his tail was visible, sticking out of the end of the pile.
"I can only see his tail," Call said. "He's doing pretty well, really."
Celia giggled. Call had gone from thinking it was weird that Celia laughed at everything he said to thinking it was kind of awesome. She was wearing a red fuzzy sweater and looked pink-cheeked and pretty.
"So how did your dad react when you brought Havoc home?"
she asked, gathering up a handful of leaves from the ground, yellow, gold, and russet. Call chose his words carefully.
"Not well," he said. "I mean, we live in a small town. It would be kind of hard to keep any pet a secret. And even though no one knows what Chaos Ridden is, they do know what a big wolf is."
"Yeah."
Celia's eyes rounded with sympathy.
"He must have been worried someone would hurt Havoc."
Celia was so nice, Call thought. It never even occurred to her that Alistair might want to hurt Havoc himself, which was impressive, considering that the only time she'd seen Alistair, at the Iron Trial, he'd been wild-eyed and waving a knife around. Reflexively, Call touched Miri's hilt, where it stuck up above the inside pocket of his jacket.
"That was your mom's knife, right?"
Celia asked shyly.
"Yeah,"
Call said. "She made it when she was a mage at school here." He swallowed around the hard lump in his throat. He tried not to think about his mother too much, about whether she would have been kinder to Havoc, whether she would have loved him, no matter what fingerprints were on his soul.
"I know she died at the Cold Massacre," Celia said. "I'm so sorry."
Call cleared his throat.
"It's all right. It was a long time ago. I never really knew her." "I never knew my aunt either," she said. "I was a baby when she was killed at the Cold Massacre, but if I ever got a chance to take revenge, I'd—"
She broke off, looking embarrassed. Havoc had freed himself from the leaves and was trotting up the hill, twigs caught in his fur.
"You'd what?" Call said. "I'd kill the enemy of death myself," she told him with finality. "I hate him so much."
Call felt like he'd been punched in the stomach. Celia was looking down at the leaves in her hands, letting them scatter over the ground like confetti. He could tell that her lips were trembling, that she was a second away from crying. Someone else, a better friend, would have stepped forward to put an arm around her, maybe pat her shoulder. But Call stood, paralyzed. How could he offer comfort to Celia over something he'd done himself? If she found out the truth, she'd hate him. That night, Call had a dream. In it, he was skateboarding around his old town with Havoc, who had his own green and gold skateboard with spiky wheels. They were both wearing sunglasses, and whenever they passed someone on the street, that person broke into spontaneous applause and threw handfuls of candy to them as though they were in a Halloween parade.
"Hello, Call,"
Master Joseph said, appearing suddenly in the middle of the street. Call tried to skate past him when everything went white as though they were standing on a blank sheet of paper. Havoc was gone. Master Joseph smiled at Call. He wore long assembly robes and clasped his hands behind his back.
Call began to back away.
Get out of my dream, he said, looking around wildly for something, anything he could use as a weapon. Get out of my head.
I'm afraid I can't do that,
Master Joseph said. There was a dark stain across the front of his robes. It looked like dirty water. Call remembered him cradling the dead body of his son, Drew, how water had gotten all over Master Joseph, and how he had cried with ugly sobs. After he'd gotten to his feet and called Call, Master, he'd said it was all right that Drew was dead because Call was Constantine Madden, and if Constantine Madden wanted Drew dead, then he must have a good reason.
This isn't real, Call insisted, pointing to his leg, which wasn't scarred or thin and didn't hurt at all, which means you're not real.
Oh, but I am, said Master Joseph.
He snapped his fingers, and snow began to fall, dusting Call's hair and catching in his lashes.
As real as this. As real as the terrible choice Alistair Hunt must make.
What? What choice?
Call asked, drawn into the argument despite himself. Master Joseph went on as if Call hadn't spoken.
Why do you remain at the Magisterium, where they will only despise you? You could be with the man who has raised you, and with me, your loyal friend. You could be safe. We could begin to rebuild your empire. If you agreed, I could take you tonight.
No, Call said. I'll never go with you.
Oh, you will,
Master Joseph told him.
Maybe not yet, but you will. I know you, you see, much better than you know yourself.
Call woke up with the cold sting of snow still on his face and shuddered. He put his hand to his cheek. It came away wet. He tried to tell himself it was just a dream, but dreams don't melt on your skin. The next class, Call raised his hand before Master Rufus could start a lecture. Master Rufus's eyebrows rose. Tamara looked surprised, although Aaron was too busy searching for something in his satchel to pay any attention.
You don't need to do that,
Master Rufus said.
There are only three of you here.
It's a habit, Call said, wiggling his fingers a little, a trick anyone who needed to be called on to get a bathroom pass knew well.
Master Rufus sighed.
All right then, Call. What is it that you need?
He dropped his hand. I want to know how to prevent people from finding us. Master Rufus rubbed a hand over his face, as though a bit flummoxed by this request.
I'm not sure I understand what you mean. Or why you need to know that. Is there something you'd like to tell me?
Tamara looked approvingly at Call. That's smart. If we knew how to hide better, then Aaron would be safer. Call might not have been smart enough to think of that, but he was smart enough to keep his mouth shut. Aaron finally looked up at the mention of his name, blinking a few times as though trying to figure out what they'd been talking about.
The element of air is what allows us to communicate over great distances,
Master Rufus said.
So it is the element of earth that blocks those communications. You can enchant a stone to protect the person who wears it or carries it. Now, tell me why we chose to build the school where we did.
So being under all this rock would make it easy to protect the school from being found?
Aaron asked. But what about that tornado phone thing you let Call use?
And what about my dream?
Call thought, but did not say. Master Rufus nodded.
Yes. The earth around the Magisterium is enchanted. There are areas of access so we can have some contact with the outside world. Perhaps we should make our Makar a stone specifically enchanted against scrying. Gather around and I will show you how. But Call and Tamara, if I find that you're using this to sneak around or to hide something, you will be in a world of trouble. I will lock you up underground like one of those elementals we discussed.
What about Aaron? How come he isn't included in that lecture?
Tamara demanded, brows furrowed. Master Rufus looked in Aaron's direction and then back at Tamara and Call.
Because individually, you and Call might be trouble. But together, the pair of you are even worse.
Aaron snickered. Call tried not to look in Tamara's direction. He was afraid that if he did, he'd discover she was upset that Master Rufus thought she was anything like Call.
The day that everything started to unravel for Call wasn't all that different from many other days. Call was outside with Master Milagros's group, Jasper, Nigel, Celia, and Gwenda. They were practicing sending bolts of fire at one another. Call's sleeve was already singed, and with his leg, he was having to do a lot of deflecting to avoid getting burned. Aaron, who Call had suddenly realized was a corrupt and evil-hearted cheater, was jumping out of the way half the time instead of bothering with magic. Eventually, Call sat down on a log, breathing hard. Jasper looked over at him as though considering whether to set his seat on fire, but seemed to decide against it when Tamara sent a blast of heat in his direction.
"The important thing,"
Master Rufus said, sitting down beside Call,
"is to always control the circumstances. Other people will react to them, but if you control them, you'll have the upper hand."
That sounded disturbingly like something Alistair had said to him just that past summer. "Our best bet of keeping people from making a fuss is controlling the circumstances under which havoc is seen." It was easy to think of Alistair's training at the Magisterium as not affecting him at all, but Master Rufus had been his teacher, too.
"What does that mean?" Call asked.
Master Rufus sighed.
"If you can't jump the way the others can, lead them to a terrain where they'll have the same disadvantage. Up a tree, in a stream, or even better, lead them to a terrain where you'll have the advantage. Create your own advantage."
"There's no terrain where I have the advantage,"
Call muttered, but he kept thinking about what Master Rufus had said all through the rest of the day while eating purple tubers in the refectory, while walking havoc, and then as he stared up at the uneven rock ceiling of his room that night. He kept thinking about his father controlling the circumstances and seeking a terrain where he'd have the advantage. He kept thinking about the chains in his father's house and the drawing of the alkahest on his father's desk. He kept coming to the same disturbing conclusion. He'd been pretty sure that his father was the one who'd tried to steal the alkahest, but that had meant it was his father who failed. But what if the failure had been deliberate? What if Alistair had failed knowing that the mages would move the alkahest out of the Collegium to a more secure location? What if he already knew the secure place that they were very likely to use, a terrain where he'd have the advantage? Back at the house, beside the drawings of the alkahest, there'd been a map of the layout of the airline hangar where the trial had been held. Call hadn't wondered where Alistair had gotten that from, until now. Tamara's parents said that Alistair was a great metal mage, and Master Rufus had said that the alkahest was safe in a vault created by metal mages below a place the kids had been before. The airplane hangar was made almost entirely of metal. Maybe Alistair, being a great metal mage, had been one of the people who'd helped build it, one of the people who knew exactly how to get into the hangar and to the vault that might be below it. If all that was true, then Alistair hadn't failed to steal the alkahest. If all that was true, the alkahest was more vulnerable than ever.
Call lay awake for a long time that night, staring into the dark. Call went through much of the next day in a daze. He couldn't pay attention in class when Master Rufus was trying to teach them how to levitate objects using metal and earth magic, and he dropped a lit candle on Tamara's head. He forgot to walk havoc, which had unfortunate results for the rug in his bedroom. In the refectory, he got distracted by the fact that Celia was waving at him and nearly tripped Aaron. Aaron stumbled, catching himself on the edge of one of the stone tables, bearing enormous cauldrons of soup.
All right, he said firmly, taking